Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Urich. I am the founder of 1000 Hours Outside, and I'm here today with someone that people constantly ask me if I know you, Leah Bowden. Welcome.
Thank you. So, you know, you live in one of my favorite states in America. Do you know that?
I didn't know.
The longest time I ever spent in the States before I lived there for a year was in Michigan.
Wow.
And I just love the Great Lakes, Ginny.
Yeah.
I love the lakes. I prefer them to the ocean. And yeah. There's something so magnificent about them, especially Lake Michigan and Lake Superior. They're my favorite.
Yes, it is a stunning place to live. We absolutely love it. So I was thinking, you are the person in my life that, bar none, people have asked if I know you the most. I was thinking in my mind, like, how many times have I been asked, you know Leah Bowden, right? Do you know Leah Bowden? You know Leah Bowden, you know her, right?
We're supposed to know each other.
And I probably always just said yes. So I didn't feel embarrassed because I'm like, clearly I'm supposed to know who she is. I mean, all the time people, you know Leah Bowden, right?
Yeah,
like, of course. So now I can officially say yes without kind of fibbing. This is such a gift to get to talk with you. And you have a new book coming out called Modern Miss Mason, and it is beautiful. Discover how Charlotte Mason's revolutionary ideas on home education can change how you and your children learn and grow together. I feel like even this cover made a splash. I remember when you posted it. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous book. And so I loved reading it.
Thank you.
Actually, I wonder if you can see. I'm going to flop this down. I have the Charlotte Mason books. Can you see them?
Oh, you do. Look at that.
But I've not read them all.
Oh, wow. Hey, it took me years. It takes most people years. And I am a advocate of a slow read through them. So don't you worry.
Actually, I'll tell you my plan. So I had a podcast episode with Amber Johnston.
Yes.
And we've done two because she had her new book that came out, A Place to Belong. But the first one was about Charlotte Mason because she calls herself Charlotte Mason with an afro.
I know. I love her. Yeah.
So we were talking about Charlotte Mason and it was before her book came out. So I was like, oh, I'm going to prepare for this one real well. I'm going to read all six.
I love your spirit.
Got a new one. All right, Leah, everyone wants to know about you, but they already probably know about you because everyone knows Leah Bowden. But tell us.
Who knows?
Tell us you. What are you all about? Tell us your story.
Sure. Well, I am Leah. I'm married to an awesome guy called Dave, and we have four fabulous children. They are ranging from 20 down to 12. She's nearly 12. Two boys, two girls. And Dave and I we met doing youth work. Our passion is really sowing into the next generation, whether that is in education, in church youth work, in youth clubs, and we both work. Dave works in education. I'm home educate our children. And I also coach and educate mothers who do the same. So we both have this similar passion to just help people grow and learn. And I think we'll do that forevermore. I live in the West Midlands in England. I'm from Yorkshire. I'm from the north, but I've relocated here when I came to university. So I'm pretty close. If those outside of England are listening and you wonder where, I'm about 2.5 hours north of London. I'm very close to Stratford-upon-Avon. So near the Shakespeare place. And what else do you want to know? I don't know. Should I tell you something strange? I don't know what to tell you.
Do you have something? Do you have a strange thing to tell us?
No, I don't think so. As soon as I left home, I started traveling. I went to university, and in my summers, I always traveled. And the first place, well, I would kind of get jobs in different places. And the first place I spent a whole summer was, like I just said, was Michigan. And then the second summer, I backpacked up the east coast of Australia. And then the third summer, I'd graduated and came and lived in the States. So I was like raring to go, but always have landed back in the UK and set up life here and have grown a family here.
Well, you like to go at life. You have a full life. You're out doing things. And so this episode, we're going to talk a lot about your homeschool journey. But a lot of people say homeschooling is just parenting, or parenting plus some teaching, or parenting plus some guidance. Really, that's what I've learned over the years. I'm hardly doing any of the teaching. It's more guiding our kids along their path and the things that they're passionate for. Right. So I think that this will apply. And I think that these books that have a homeschool focus still have so much that any parent can grab out of them, depending on their situation, no matter their situation, I guess I should say, of just principles. It's about principles. Yeah. And that's what Charlotte Mason was about. She was about principles. And not everything is the same as how it used to be. I remember reading her book, and it's got things about a nanny. And I'm like, this would be easier if I had a nanny, but you
can, we all like a nanny, yeah. Yeah.
But you can still take the principles from it and glean from those. But then also for people who are homeschooling, this will be really encouraging and life-giving. So I think it works for anyone who's listening in. But I think people would love to hear your story about your journey to homeschooling, including the family that you met or the kids you met. You talked about these children you had met at the Kingdom Schoolhouse and the impact that they had on you.
Yeah. So the seeds, I guess, of the Charlotte Mason, well, no, the seeds of home education, as we call it here in the UK, were kind of dropped in when I was at Bible college for a year in St. Louis, Missouri. And I'd never come across home education, homeschoolers, anything like that. I just, that wasn't in my world in the UK. And it wasn't really something you heard of here. So there I was in the States. I was doing this discipleship year, and the church that I was kind of working with, they had a center for homeschoolers. So we were often coming across kids in the same building where we'd be doing our lectures and whatever, whatever. And this one, I tell the story in the book, this one particular day, it's a story about eating Sloppy Joes for the first time as well, which I never ate again, and discovered what they were. Who puts meat in bread?
I mean, still to this day, you've only had them one time. What?
One time. I'm not having that again. So, and I met these children who, and the thing that struck me was their ability to have a conversation with an adult, a stranger from another country, and they were polite. It wasn't kind of pretentious, it wasn't over the top, and they asked me, you know, how are you enjoying your time in England, and they looked me in the eye. Now, I know a lot of kids are like that, but there was something that stood out about them. And they weren't all from one family, they were from various families. And my friend who I was with, who worked there and lived there, she explained, oh, that they're homeschooled children. And I was like, they're what? You know, how do I get one of those? So this was the first kind of this little creak of the door, like opening into this world of what homeschooling was. We had a long conversation about it. And over the year of my time there, I discovered more and more about it. And, you know, I was a single woman. There was no reason for me to be kind of exploring that. And it actually wasn't until I was married, had one child, and Dave and I were like looking at, I think we'd got two children actually, but we were talking about school places, when it just sprung back up. And that's the thing about seeds. They kind of come up at the right time and done their germinating. Yeah. And I actually, so Naya was, she had a place at a preschool, like a pre-K, I guess that would be the age she would have been at. She was signed up. I think she was only in for like half days, but I remember walking her down the street. We lived in walking distance, and it just hit me. Like, I didn't want to do this. This wasn't in the plan. And so that was the beginning, which then shifts, you know, as people know who are married, it shifts into a conversation of, hey, darling, can we have a chat? And we actually took our time. And as ever, I was like a million miles ahead of Dave, bless him. And I'd started reading books and blogs, and thus began our kind of discovery, our journey into home education. And we really, because we'd both worked in education, we'd worked with young people, we were, you know, we knew this was something, we were passionate about establishing a vision for our family, and not just an educational choice. This was something about being around them more because we could. And what we discovered is that here in the UK, we have complete freedom to educate our children at home. There are no restrictions at all, which was incredible because not many people did it. So we knew one other family back in the early 2000s. Yeah, can you imagine? Wow. One other family. And so we hung out with them a bit and chatted with them, and their influence was from the States as well, what they were reading and learning about. But basically very early on in that journey, I was reading all the blogs because that's what was out there. And they were mostly American. And I came across this person called Charlotte Mason, who was a British educator. Mm-hmm. But it was Americans telling me all about her. I was like, this doesn't make sense. And I haven't looked back since. And our, you know, many years of home educating has looked, well, you know, as it does, just like family life, it has its ups and downs. It has very nuanced. Charlotte Mason says that the sole end of education is growth. So whatever it looks like in people's homes, whether it is partly in school, in the school system, partly at home, or if it changes throughout the years, the question is, are we growing? And that's, for me, it's a question for mothers, for parents, and for children, no matter what stage you're at, or what kind of day you've had, or what kind of year you've had. Are you growing? And the thing about growth, just like that little seed that germinated and sprung up in me, is that it can be slow. Growth is still growth, whether it's slow or fast. It's still growth. Yeah. And that really is the foundation of our home educating journey, is that we're growing and we're growing together. And so that is the plumb line. That is kind of the thing that I analyze, I reflect on all the time. Are we growing?
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of a part in the book where you talked about there was a certain place where they don't even have a word for learning. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a tribe. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In southern Thailand, there's no word in their language for teaching or learning. They're just growing.
Yeah.
I mean, I really can't even wrap my head around that. Not having a word for teaching or learning.
And that was in a particular tribe. That was a book called Raising Humans, I think it was called, or something like that, wasn't it? And I'm looking to the side because I know it's right in my arm's length. But he was researching a particular people group in that area. And yeah, kids just grow and they grow up alongside all different ages. Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. I love that.
It's interesting to think about how our life would be different, how the structure of it would be different if we didn't have words for teaching or learning.
Absolutely.
Because childhood is really consumed with those things. And if we looked at it just as growth and moving along the path of life, I love that question. Are we growing? So, okay. So the book is called Modern Miss Mason because Charlotte Mason is from a long time ago. Tell us who she is and why are so many people talking about her? And what is your take by modernizing Modern Miss Mason?
Sure. Okay. So Charlotte Mason was a revolutionary 19th century British educator who was raised, well, she kind of came into the world with an unusual family setup, really. But yeah, I won't go into all that now. You can read biographies about her, but she was orphaned by the time she was 17. But even before that, she'd started, because of her kind of the economic situation she was in, really the one path that she was going to be going on was teaching. Her father's background was a Quaker, and they often went into teaching. So she, from a 12-year-old, she already started to be like a teacher's apprentice. So she, you know, even from childhood, she gave her whole life for the sake of children. And we see her journey not in the school system. So the interesting thing about Charlotte's work and her writing and all that she did, it wasn't for the homeschooling movement that we see and understand today. So as you've already referenced, she often talks about governesses and nurseries and the help. You know, it's just people who would come in and these. So she often worked with, when she got to a certain stage in her career, she started her own school of education where she trained up governesses who would go out all over the world eventually.
Wow.
And she would train teachers. But then what started to happen is as her first book, book one, Home Education, which began as a series of lectures, became a book that was published and mothers started to read that. And I've read, Ginny, some of the letters in the archives of mothers, the gratitude writing to Charlotte, like just gushing, like this one letter, I think I referred to it at one point in the book, but she said, I've read this over and over again. And you feel teary when you're reading it because she said, it's changed the way I mother. It has changed the way I parent. It's changed the way I educate. And some of these mothers were teaching their children from home, or they would have a governess in the house because of the social structure, because of, you know, just how it was in Victorian England. But what happened was these revolutionary ideas were really around a few principles. So she had 20. But even in her own writing, she said, there's really a few that we can turn to. Fantastic book by Karen Glass called, I think it's the In Vital Harmony, I think it's that one. But she basically refers to these, a handful or two or three that really are what Charlotte Mason sits her philosophy upon. And the first one is children are born persons. So in the book, it's the chapter on raising humans, is this whole preface that children are not born like an empty bucket or a mold, a big lump of clay to be molded. They are born whole, ready to connect with the world. And our job as parents, teachers, facilitators of education is to create the atmosphere and rhythms in their life and resources that are available to them to bring out who they already are. And that just blew my mind. It's like this upside down educational concept that it's not about traditional education. It's most traditional education. Again, I will repeat, my husband works in the school system, so I'm always very honoring. Yeah. But it kind of spoon feeds. It brings things from the outside in and it says, here you go, learn this, gurgitate it this way, and then when it gets to exam time and test time, you'll be able to answer the questions.
Wait, you had this amazing part in here about the spoon feeding.
Yeah,
and it was so funny. Like, here, I'm gonna shove it in your mouth, and then I'm gonna tell you how it tastes and what the texture is like. Right. I mean, I really thought that was funny.
And that's exactly what I think. And that's why I describe it as an upside down, inside out educational philosophy, because what the Charlotte Mason philosophy. So in the book, I paint this picture. You sat down at the table, you got all this food out, and you say to your kid, you know, you say, come on, let's have dinner. And then you, like you just said, you start picking up the spoon and shoving the food in their mouth and saying, this is, you know, this is chili. It's got a bit of spice to it. Swallow it. This is what you'll feel like. Whereas the Charlotte Mason
in so many ways, that is what we do with education.
It so is. We say, and even, you know what, Gina, even within homeschooling, even within the Charlotte Mason philosophy, I get, you know, I do coaching. So I get mothers saying to me, what if they're not doing enough? What if they're getting behind? What if, what if, what if? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, behind who? Right. Who are they trying to catch up with? And there is this ingrained pressure to almost industrialize education. So we're bringing out a product rather than a person. And what the Charlotte Mason philosophy does, what she says with this born person approach, and it all ties in with living books and living resources and narration. Again, you can read about all this stuff. It's all about offering an environment, taking them outside, offering beautiful books and conversation, and then allowing them to contribute. And so what's happening is you are saying, tell me what's on the inside of you and what connects for you and what you heard, rather than let me push in you what I think you should know. Do you know what? It took me years to really understand that. That's why, you know, I'm 47 years old and I finally said, I'm going to write this book, because I wanted it to live in me. And I wanted to see the fruit of it in my children. And I wanted to feel the fullness of it before I could fully communicate it. And then when you get to that point, you can simplify it to the table analogy.
Yeah, it is a good one, because, you know, it's like you think of a feast and you think of all this beautiful, you know, everyone's doing these cool charcuterie boards and butter boards. You can envision a feast, and then you can envision that life is also a feast. And you talk about your travels in your college years. You come to Michigan, you're seeing these Great Lakes. You're going to St. Louis and you're seeing the Arch. I don't know. You know, you're having all of these travels, and life is a feast. And we set it before our children, and they're going to take from it what they will and grow into the people that they are meant to become. I just finished a book by Stephen Pressfield called The War of Art.
I've read it.
It's so good. And I keep it in my purse, because he has a chapter in there about, look, you know, if you have children, or you know children, or you even think about your own self, like, we are who we are and we come how we come. And so here we are as an encourager journeying alongside of these people, you know, born full persons, that they have their own path that they're supposed to follow. And I love that. I think that you can't get away from it. I mean, even if you look at Charlotte Mason, and I liked what you talked to, because I'm like thinking about Charlotte Mason. Here's the thing. Okay, you're 47. You just wrote a book. I just wrote a book. And yeah, it's a thing. But she wrote 6 books. And
she wrote more than that. She wrote loads more.
Yeah. And the writing is so small.
I know.
I'm like, okay.
You know, it's so crazy. And you, in her day, the manuscripts were handwritten, and I've seen them. I've seen the manuscripts, and I can't read her writing. I'm like, girl, you're telling me to do cursive writing with my kids? I cannot read them. But she wrote poetry, she wrote devotionals, she wrote geography series for children. What we've got there, and what, you know, we have money we have on our shelves, is 6 volumes of books. But a lot of those were articles that she wrote. One of them, the book of ourselves, that's 2 books put into one. Right. She was a prolific writer, creator. She was outstanding.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure, whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit. I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessi's Stormburst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's vessi.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
And businesswoman.
In a time when you say when voices, women's voices in society were only just beginning to be heard. So she doesn't have a word processor. She comes out with this massive volume. I mean, that writing is so small and the books are so cohesive that you're like, how did she even begin to do that without being able to go back and delete and have an editor and this whole process? And she did it and her work has lived on. But that's sort of to the point that that's who she was. That's what she was meant to do. And then you talk about in the book, I thought this was interesting. You say, my mission is to be interested in other people's children, not just my own. Yes. And I love that because it is a reminder that all of these kids are born persons.
They're amazing. They're all amazing. And they're all wired so different. And they're all incredibly beautifully complicated. But there's something when you sit with other, and I think for mothers, we need that from each other. Like if I was in a room with you and your kids, I'd be chatting with your kids and trying to, or just being around them or seeing, you know, I think they're fascinating. And I love that because often in the trenches of motherhood, we're so exhausted with our own that we can't see beyond that. But I think Charlotte Mason wasn't a mother. I don't think, you know, she had many things to bear in her life, but she didn't give birth to children or raise them herself. But I'm always saying this, much of what she wrote and spoke into motherhood, childhood and education was not only from her work, but from her close observation of family life and how she saw mothers interacting with their children. You know, her motto was for the children's sake, and she truly gave her whole life for children, and her legacy continues, which is just so powerful.
It is. So tell us why modern Miss Mason.
Yes. So, I mean, really what I found, Ginny, I read, you know, I entered this world of home education as a 21st century British woman who I was reading American blogs and some of the things I was coming across beautifully put together by American homeschoolers just didn't fit my British family and my understanding of life and how it looked here. And so I'm a little bit of a rebel at heart. I like to do things my own way. I like to mess with the recipe. So what I did was I just thought, you know what, I'm going to read these books and put bits into practice as and when I can. And I'm just going to figure out my own way of doing it. And so that's what I did rather than kind of, and I'm not a person who I don't need a framework particularly. I didn't. And to this day, some people are like astounded by this. Apart from maths, as we call it here, I have never followed a curriculum. So I've never purchased a curriculum and I've never followed one. The only thing that we do, because the kids have to take a national exam in maths eventually, we use an online maths program. I have just curated my own. you can see behind me from this video, you know, this is part of our library. And I decided to teach myself the methods and the heart of the philosophy, just kind of try and get it into my skin and then just see where it led me. And here we are all these years later and kind of been living it out. And what I came across time and time again, so about 7 years into the journey, I started, do you remember a platform called Periscope, a video platform?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah.
You're going to say, I may be quite a bit older than you, Ginny, but I don't know. I'm not.
No, I've heard of Periscope.
Okay. Periscope. I started to jump on Periscope when my kids were napping, when my younger kids were napping, and share about the Charlotte Mason philosophy. I just was like, and I swear I met so many people actually that I still, you know, talk to today. And one of these videos, it was interesting. I was just, and I didn't know any different. I just said, this is how we're doing it. This is what I'm reading. This is what it looks like. And this girl came on and she said, you're like the modern Miss Mason. I was like, I'm like, the what? That's great. I'm taking that.
Let me write that. Wow. Do you know what I'm picking out from your story here, Leah, is that there's so many little things, little ripples. Like if this wouldn't have happened, if you wouldn't have seen those kids, those home educating kids when you were at Bible school, and if you weren't on that Periscope call, I mean, this is the name of your book, Modern Miss Mason.
It is. And it's interesting because I actually wanted to call the book Walking with Charlotte, and which is what the introduction's called. And the publishers loved, they said, let's go with Modern Miss Mason. And I know it's the right, the right thing. And publishers have all the different reasons for that.
Yeah.
But the lady who said that on that day, I've never met her in person. She's a British mum. And I know her name. And her name is in the acknowledgements. I don't tell that whole story, but that was a really pivotal point where I just thought, yeah, you know what, this is what I need to do. And my kind of, it wasn't about me. And I like to stress that it's about when I started to kind of build, for want of better word, a platform around the phrase Modern Miss Mason, it was about what I was saying to the mothers is like, this is a place where your face can fit. Because what I was coming across time and time again was people saying, I've tried doing the Charlotte Mason philosophy. I've used this, this, and this, and I am completely burnt out and I don't know what I'm doing. And I would like take them back to ground zero and say, okay, let's start and rebuild from here. Who are you? Who are your children? Start there. Not with what curriculum you're going to use. Let's go back. And so it was a place, and I came up with this phrase, and this is who I am to this day, really. It's finding your freedom within the philosophy. And that's what it's always been. And I know it's not for everybody within the Charlotte Mason philosophy. And I'm okay with that because I'm not out to impress. I want to hold a door open and be hospitable and generous with, you know, what I have learned and how I have grown. And hopefully others will come into that place and feel it and experience it as a place of space. Mm-hmm. And that's what Modern Miss Mason's always been about, is this is a spacious place. It's not prescriptive, but we've got some great things here that we can learn from.
Yeah. And that's how Charlotte Mason was too. She wasn't out to make a name for herself either, even though she ended up doing that. It's interesting that you brought up the freedom, because that was the next topic on here that I was thinking about bringing up. You have this sentence, this book is a signed permission slip to do it your way. And Ainsley Arment has a foreword in the book where she talks about, you know, people have always tried to measure and assess and put kids in a box, but they're passionate and full of possibilities. You know, learning is not linear. And so where can parents find the confidence to embrace freedom and learn to trust themselves?
Yeah, it's, you know, that's not an easy one to answer. And I work one-on-one with mothers who sometimes I will work for months on end together to get them to that place of recognizing a lot of tears and a lot of breaking down what they have been doing and what they think, because there is a lot of those shoulds and coulds and I should be doing this. And, you know, comparison is huge, isn't it? I mean, we talk about it all the time when we talk about our online world, and mothers are scrolling past their, you know, what their desired perfection. So it seems, you know, I'm such an advocate of like, what is the real in your home today? Look at your kids' faces in the midst of your very real home. you're not going to escape from it. Whatever is going on, you're going to move through it together. And this is the thing, is that confidence comes from you and your situation. I don't like people looking at my 20-year journey of parenting thinking they can be like me. And I'm very careful what I share because I know it's strong. People think I should be at that place. I should look like that. And I think confidence is sometimes just, first of all, recognizing your reality and being very much in that place and staying in it. So whether it's, you know what, we have no homeschool budget, but you know, the kids are healthy, we've got a roof over our head, my husband's supportive, we only have one car, we've got a little bit of green space 5 minutes walk from us, whatever the reality is. So the next time you scroll and see somebody living in the mountains, you know, and think it
they've got a
matter.
Beautiful homeschool room,
I know, right. Yeah, exactly. And I just see the beauty and gratitude is a massive key. I mean, we say it all the time, but honestly, that has been a breaker for me. It's like gratitude for the simple things. We used to live in a tiny three-bedroomed, one bathroom, terraced house, no garden, and with a little yard. And we did the first half of our homeschool journey in that tiny house. Wow. And that's where the fruit of everything I write about, everything I live out, it started there in the simplicity of that, because I was grateful for what I had. And we walked for 10 minutes to a green patch of land. And that was our nature walk. And we saw every season in that little green patch of land. And we learned so much from that. And I think we can be so desperate for somebody else's life that we miss what we're in. And that's where the confidence comes from, is one, recognizing your reality, two, being grateful for the beauty within that reality, and three, living it out every day. You know, what can I do to make this beautiful for my children? How small? And we honestly, I used to have to sell books to buy books. We had nothing. We just did it on that basic thing. And yet I have nothing but great memories from those years, because the beauty of living before, you know, doing life before Instagram as well, was that I had nothing to compare it to. It was Dave and I and our kiddos, and we were like, this is amazing. And the thing that we appreciated was the freedom to be able to home educate, was the freedom to be able to be around our family. And so that has grown with us. And that's what I try to help other mothers. You know, encouragement is putting courage into each other. And I think that's why, you know, I think we're not supposed to do this on our own, whether it's in real community or online community. We need each other. We need to say, hey, you're doing a great job. Well done. You know, how can I help you? What can I do to help what you're doing and encourage you? And I think putting that courage into each other is a, you know, such an important part of the journey as well. And I hope that the book does that, and I hope that my message does that, because that's the most important thing in the end. That is it.
I can see why people adore you. I'm like tearing up over here. No, I'm like, I probably should have a box of Kleenex. I'm getting all emotional. Well, because, you know, you think about how stressed that we are and how much pressure that we feel. And here you started your journey in a situation that most would not consider ideal, that you have, you can't go buy curriculum and you are in this smaller home, in this smaller space. And that statement you said, we can be so desperate for someone else's life, but here is your life and your life changed. We can't control it. Your life changed in a happenstance meeting of home educated children.
I know.
No one can coordinate that or coerce that. There's just has to be this baseline level of trust in the life that we have. That's the life that we have in front of us, the children that we have in front of us. And that's why I'm crying, basically.
I know. I feel it too. It is such a privilege, though. It's such a privilege. It is.
To that point, too, you had this really cool statement in there from Dr. Carol Smith, where he said, give out from what you have. Yes. I thought that was huge. Can you tell about that?
Yeah, I mean, he's this this kind of really academic guy. He was the first director of the Charlotte Mason Institute, and he came over to the UK and did some. I think he's got one of his children lives over here. He did some workshops for us. And, you know, he's in the later stages of his life, but had this wisdom, and he's spent many, many years learning about Charlotte Mason and for academic purposes. And he was just really passionate about, no matter how far along the journey you are, whether it's a couple of years or you're just starting to know what narration is or what understand what a living book is, share it with somebody else. And I liked that concept that, like, wherever you are at that place, and that's really where I started. I remember when I started jumping on these periscopes, and I was probably about 7 years in. So to some people, that's a bit of a veteran, you know, but really for me, it was early days still. And I just started to share that, well, this is what it looks like for me. And this is brilliant. And this is what we're learning. And this is what how my kids are responding. And that's really what he was saying, is like the voice is of the mothers who are doing the work. And, you know, there are many academics out there writing and studying about educational philosophy, and it's really helpful and amazing. But for the mum who's got a toddler on her hip and breastfeeding another, and she's teaching a child to read, and then she's cooking dinner with the other arm, academic study isn't particularly on the forefront of her mind. She's like, how do I get time to read aloud? How do I get time to get outside for all those hours that Charlotte Mason says? And he's like, go from that place of reality for you. And I loved that. I was like, this is the grassroots stuff is what I'm about. And it's like, this is what's the real, what does it look like in your home? Because that's really behind all the squares and the screens. That is what where the rich, raw beauty is our everyday homes and our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. That's where it's at. That's the stuff that we'll remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And there is rich beauty, and you talk about it so well for mothers. Yes. I think that there is this misconception that when you home educate, or even when you just spend more time with your kids, that you're going to lose your mind. And in some ways you do. In some ways it is really difficult, and you are struggling on a day-to-day basis, but in an overall sense, and you talk about growth over the long term, I have never grown more than in this time of motherhood. And walking alongside it with my children, because they're constantly changing. So I'm constantly having to adjust and to learn. Absolutely. And there is this quote, is this a Charlotte Mason quote? If mothers could learn to do for themselves what they do for their children, when these are overdone, we should have a happier household. Let the mother go out to play. Say it for us.
Mothers go out to play. I know. I mean, that's an oft-quoted Charlotte Mason kind of thing that's said. And it's interesting because in the context of that, she is talking about the pressure that mothers feel. And she talks about this really interesting thing that I was sharing with a workshop at the weekend, actually. And she says, we do well to look at the master's pictures of the Madonna, because she's always so serene and peaceful and carrying a naked baby. She says we should have them around the house. Just look at her face. She's very serene and peaceful. And basically she's saying, look, I can see the pressures of motherhood. She spent all this time saying, do this with your children and invest this in them and teach them this. And so Charlotte Mason is giving, you know, she's done all this writing and teaching and set up these programs to invest in our children. And then she could see the pressures on the mothers and said, if you only could do that similar stuff for yourself, then maybe, and she uses this phrase, and I think she says something like, if you could just put aside all that pressure for a moment. So she's not saying, you know, escape from it and go to the spa and go for a manicure. She's like, just put it aside. Go read a book, go get into bed on your own. She says, go out in nature, go and look at some art in a gallery, you know, just even if it's just half a day. And she throws these little things, these little droplets of advice in, because she knows it's not only for, so, you know, we use these phrases about you can't give out from an empty cup and all that, and we've got to fill up. But for me, she paints this picture of a continual refreshing and a continual feeding. So, you know, for me, I have art around the spaces in my house. I've got them stuck on the boiler in my kitchen. There's prints of art, so that even when I'm doing the mundane tasks of life, I'm looking at something that is going to help my playfulness or my intellectual growth. I've got books all over, scattered throughout the house. I've got things for people to be looking at and enjoying. So it's this continuous responsibility to refresh ourselves. And rather than getting to that point of absolute burnout and needing a weekend away with the girls, and she kind of gives these very simple tips, which I break down in the book, of things that we can do every day that we also do with our children. And so, but this concept of play is so interesting because, you know, as 21st century mothers, we can break that right out and say, what does play look like? And I have found that I'm quite a, well, you ask my husband, when he first met me, I was quite a serious person. He was the funny one. I was the very serious one. We've switched a little bit, but we've helped each other over 22 years. But I can veer on more of an intensity and a more serious and kind of like, I've got things to do. And I've had to be helped by friends, community, husband, kids, to be more playful. And but some of these concepts really, they were so important for me that that was a challenge to me. What does it look like to play? I'm sure you're amazing at it. You seem like somebody who's amazing at playing.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking
it. I like to play. I do. I like to play games.
Help me. I need to hang out with you.
But, you know, I also think you brought up a good point when you were talking about intellectual growth, because intellectual growth does increase your dopamine.
Yes, it does.
Learning things does help you feel better. And yes. So you touched on that in the book too, that just by learning alongside of our children, that's going to help our intellectual growth. That's going to help us feel better. And you said, I loved this. You say, one of the things I love to do is listen to podcasts or watch documentaries interviewing older women with interesting life stories.
I love it.
Oh, I want to do that. Can you tell us about one or two? And you were talking about Julie Andrews. I love Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews, yeah. And Dame Judy Dench, who's one of my favorite British actors. And she is known as like a British icon. But these, her especially, I mean, these women who are usually in the arts world, so either actors, authors. I remember listening to one of the last podcasts that the poet Mary Oliver ever did. I mean, she didn't do many podcasts. You can still listen to it. It's on Krista Tippett's On Being. And she'd come through lung cancer once. And I think she was, I think that's what she died of in the end. But this amazing interview at the end of her life, and just this rich wisdom of, there's something about listening to a woman in her 80s or the mid 80s, nearly coming into her 90s, where there's, you just don't care. They don't seem to care about the same stuff anymore. They've learned all their lessons. Mary Oliver wasn't a mother, but you know, with some of the others I've been listening to, they talk about parenting or grandparenting. And there's almost this kind of letting go of some of those things that we carry, especially in our 20s and 30s. I found coming into my 40s and now into my later 40s, I can feel this gradual flinging off of, I don't need to worry about that anymore. Who cares about that? And it's very nice, very liberating. And that's what I heard. But also this, what you get from these older women is they start to hone in on what's really important, because they're reflecting on, and for me, I love the creative life. So I love listening to people who have writing rhythms and creative rhythms and what they do to enhance that. And listening to these older women talk about that, Lucy Shaw, another poet that's still alive, she's about 94. She talks about just observation and paying attention and always just like snapping a picture and then going home and writing a poem. And, you know, and they're often, wow, they're in this stage of life where they don't have the daily responsibilities we have. And it is a very different stage. But I just love listening to them and gleaning from them and helping me maybe readjust a few of things that I think maybe are more important than they are right now. And I would encourage it for any woman, find some interesting, you know, people, especially those in the public eye where they've had to kind of deal with the pressures of that. They often are even more refined in wow, what they see as important. Wow. So yeah, they're great. I love that.
Oh, that's powerful. That's a really good idea. I just read a book earlier this year called The Five Regrets of the Dying by Bronnie Ware. And it's similar. It makes you think about, does this really matter? And what do I want the whole of my life, the whole of my motherhood to look like? And so I'm interested to listen to some of those podcasts. So, okay, there's something in the book that you brought up that I've not talked to anyone about ever.
Okay.
You talked a little bit earlier about moving through things together. And I think that one of the benefits of home education is that kids get a front row seat to the nitty-gritty of family life. And you talked about how you were struggling with organization and order and you got a cleaner.
Yes.
Oh, this is kind of like a random topic, but it's something that I struggle with my entire life. It's like, do you spend the money? Do you not spend the money? What do you know? Like, but then you also wove it into this concept of sometimes to make things better, we have to ask for help. That's what you say. And that you modeled that for your kids.
I did. Yes.
Tell us about the cleaner. And it's a little bit of a random topic, but I'm super curious.
Let me tell you, I really deliberated. Even after my book had gone through editorial and everything, I was like, I want to take that out. I don't want to say that. And do you know why? Because I felt like it sounded entitled. And here I am telling you, we had nothing. We had no money. We just didn't have anything. And yet as a family, as a couple, because we've never been that kind of entitled kind of family. It's not who we are. But when you're reading a book, people don't know that. They, you know, they may not have heard this conversation and they could just pick that book up from anywhere. And I was suddenly a little bit prideful about it, a bit like, oh my goodness, this. But then I had to let that go because I recognized, just like you've picked up, actually, this could be an important lesson for some people. Because you all, I mean, even if you had a cleaner once a month and spent $20, $30 or whatever, that actually it helps my mental space as much as the physical space of my house. So basically, and also a phrase that my husband says, he'll often say, Leah, that's what money is for. Help us. He's so great at that. And we were in that together. So basically, I have recognized as I've got older that I probably do have some executive function issues, and I mask them. I mask all the time. And I probably have since I was a kid, really. And I either everything goes to pot or I over organize everything. People are probably analyzing me as I speak. But anyway, at one point, I do recognize these things in me more and more. So at one point, it was a case of, I often say when I'm talking to coaching clients or in workshops, I say these three things. When you are feeling overwhelmed, make a big list of all the stuff you're responsible for. What can you automate, delegate, or give away? Automate, delegate, give away. And so nowadays, here we are, 2022, we can automate so much, grocery shopping, all the things, you know, you can do that just for a couple of dollars more than a normal grocery shop. You know, what can you delegate? And at this point, it was a case of, I am not good at cleaning. And I really like a clean house. And, you know, I can get my, at that point, some of my, you know, my kids were younger, you know, you can get your kids to help. And I'm doing inverted commas here. I'm doing bunny ears, get them to help to clean the bathroom. But I wanted a really clean bathroom. And the time and energy that I was taking, because I was becoming such a perfectionist about it, was taken away from other stuff. And I was like an all or nothing person. And it was kind of like, you know what? We need help. We need to delegate this job. And it was literal the basics of the cleaning. And it was amazing. It just, and we've had one recently again. I go on and off with it really, depending on what's going on in my life. But just 2 hours a week to know that the bathrooms are done, the floors are done, the kitchen's been wiped down. It is a lot. It does so much for my mind space and my brain as much as for our physical space. And then, yeah, so automate, delegate, give away. And that really is a question of, are you doing things that you shouldn't be doing, which is often volunteer work and things like that. And so that's how I look at my responsibilities in my life. If I ever feel really overwhelmed, and I just take a little pause and have a look at what's going on and ask myself those three questions. And so in a season of my life, that was, I need to delegate the cleaning.
Yeah. I love that you included it. It does feel a little uncomfortable, right?
Yes, it did.
But on the other side of that, it really flows with your message about freedom.
Yes.
Which is that each of our families are unique. You have 4 kids, yeah. You're a writer, you're influencing, and you have these other things. And like your husband said, that's what money is there to help us.
To help us.
There is a stigma around that for whatever reason, but that is what it is at its core, is getting help. And maybe in generations past, you might have had a niece that lived close by, or an auntie or something that would have come and done those things because they had the margin for it. And now we're kind of alone and isolated. And so I think what that does is it gives permission. Because Leah did it. And that's what you talked about. This book is a signed permission slip. And if that's your way, if that's something that you need. So I was really glad you had it in there.
Oh, you know, I wish I could like have some kind of grant, some fund that gives out a cleaning fund to homeschool mums all over the world.
Sally Clarkson talked about it. And I had a girlfriend, the girl who introduced me to Charlotte Mason. Her name is Angela. She lives in Texas, but she used to live in Michigan and her husband was here for residency. And so she had a lot of young kids and I had young kids and we went to MOPS, which is Mothers of Preschoolers together. Yeah. We went to that together. We were at the same table and she's the one who, like I said, introduced me to Charlotte Mason. But her mom or mother-in-law, one of them, the grandma who lived in Texas, who lived very far away, paid for her to have a cleaner twice a month. And I won't ever forget that. I think that as a grandparent, and I know some grandparents listen, that's a gift, you know, to help your child, your daughter, your daughter-in-law, your son-in-law, whoever, to clear the clutter from their home, to have that little bit of a breath of clean. I will never forget that. My hope is that when I become a grandma, I'm able to do something similar for my daughter, daughter-in-laws, when they have young children. So Leah, let me tell you all the things that we have not talked about.
Okay.
Masterly inactivity, narration, living books, nature, musical memories, attention.
There's a lot.
Where has the time gone? They're going to have to read the book. It is a phenomenal book. Attention spans. Why is the ability to pay attention so important? You cleared up for me what narration is. I was always scared of it, so I didn't go there. I'm like, I feel like I'm kind of already doing this in some ways. Living books. You talk about your Monday Club from your childhood. Okay, can we end with your monogram seal stamp? Because I love that. And then I've got one last question.
I'm going to have to show you it. I know they won't see it on the podcast, but I'll describe it. So it's blue and it's and every book that comes into the house gets this stamp on it.
It almost looks like a stapler.
Yeah, it does a little bit. And basically the book page just goes through there. And it's the...
What does it do? It does like an indent kind of?
It indents.
Wow.
So, and also I've just, this is hot off the press. I've just ordered myself another one and the imprint is signed by the author. So any of the books that I'm going to sign, they're going to get a monogram stamp because it's in the book. So
that is really awesome. I've never seen one of those. That is so neat. Yeah. Leah, I see why everyone says, have you met Leah? Do you know Leah? This has been so life-giving. And I hope we get to do it again. Because I missed a lot of very large topics. So maybe when you're through the whirlwind of book launch, we can chat another time. And people, I know, will love your book, Modern Miss Mason, Discover How Charlotte Mason's Revolutionary Ideas on Home Education Can Change How you and your children learn and grow together. It comes out January 10th, available wherever books are sold. If people want to find you, you have the Modern Miss Mason podcast, which is fantastic. They can find you at leahboden.com, and I'll link it in the show notes. You are a writer, a speaker, a coach, and an educator. So there's lots to find there. And we always end our podcast, Leah, with the same question. What is a that Charlotte Mason, I think, would approve of? What is a favorite outdoor childhood memory that you have?
Walking through the woods. I talk about Stony Cliff Woods in the book, and I grew up in a village in Yorkshire. And we literally walked down the street from where we lived, and it was an ancient woodland. So this ancient woodland, you know, they're ancient woodlands in the UK because they're full of bluebells in the spring, wild garlic. They'll have wood anemones in the late winter, early spring, and wood anemones only grow in old woodland. And so that... those memories, they evoke smells as well. So just smelling the richness of that, and we could hear the cuckoo and the owl. But one really big memory was going down there one spring with my mum and some friends, and we got lost in the ferns because they were so high that we were just walking, and then we got completely lost. And my mother, who's a woman of prayer, basically prayed our way out of it.
Wow. What a memory.
And she never made us feel worried once. She's like, it's fine. We're going to be fine. And so, yeah, Stony Cliff Woods. That's a big kind of core memory of my childhood. It was wonderful.
Which is like, it's of a disaster. You know, like when we think about the own memories.
the surrender, but just the woods itself, but my mother's like, she just did not flap.
Yeah.
Her unflappable. She's like, we'll get out of here. It will be fine. But the ferns grew so high, we must have been quite small.
Wow. I love that. Leah, thank you for your time. Thank you for your beautiful book. Thank you for what the freedom that you are imparting to families. I know that people are going to get so much out of this conversation and out of your book and out of all that you have to come.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.